This is Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi. Sponsored by Hartford Healthcare, Rochford Eye Center, St. Francis Hospital, Covaris, and Yukon Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Healthy Rounds provides general information regarding medical conditions and diseases. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You're encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own medical care. And now, Dr. Anthony Alessi on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Healthy Rounds, the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information and answers all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be with you on this final live show of Healthy Rounds. As many of you know, after 16 years, we are going to end this program at the end of the year. And today is the last live program, but until the end of the year, I'm still going to be on, but taping introductions with new medical information and revisiting some of our most outstanding interviews that we've done over the past years. But today's guest is very special. It's Dr. Kevin Felice. Dr. Felice is the medical director for research at the Neuromuscular Center at the Hospital for Special Care. And it's very special because this interview provides the perfect bookend to this show. Dr. Felice was my first guest 16 years ago when we talked about neuromuscular diseases. So today, he and I are going to look at the same neuromuscular diseases we discussed 16 years ago and see what kind of progress we've made in the treatment and care for patients with neuromuscular diseases. For those of you unfamiliar, we're going to be talking about myasthenia gravis. We're going to talk about peripheral neuropathy that affects so many people. We're going to talk about ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, of which he is really the regional and among the national experts in their treatment. But what I'd like to do right now is, if you'll indulge me, by taking a few minutes to really talk about the evolution of this program and how it all started. It really started back in 2008 when I started writing a column for the newspaper, the Norwich Bulletin. I was in practice, in private practice in Norwich. I wrote an article for the hospital every month that was published in the Norwich Bulletin, and that evolved into a weekly column called Healthy Sports, and that eventually became my first book, A Doctor's Lessons for a Winning Lifestyle. Based on that weekly column, I was invited to be on a radio program every Saturday called Sports Talk with Bill Donovan and Mike McLaughlin. They were my first experience getting into a studio and doing radio. That was followed by working weekly with a fellow by the name of Lee Elsie, who is still on the air. We worked together at WXLM in New London, and I served as a substitute for him when he went on vacation. Based on that, WXLM asked me in 2008 to start a program, and that's when Healthy Rounds was born. I did that for about 10 months and then took the summer off. In that summer of 2009, I became familiar with two gentlemen, one of those being Gene Sheehan and Dan Tapper. And they were public relations folks who had their own firm and still have a firm in Hartford, although Gene unfortunately passed. And they thought the show would be a perfect fit for WTIC, and they brought it to Steve Salhaney. That and Ray Dunaway. So those four people at WTIC were so crucial to getting this show started 16 years ago. Naturally, we'd be nowhere without our partners and support from our partners. Amy Ashton was the original person who was in charge of sales and marketing. And more recently, as I say every week, Jeff Chandler has done a phenomenal job of making sure we have the support to keep this program going. But after 16 years of Saturdays, it's been time for me to kind of move on. I'm not retiring, though. We've created a community. I was looking back at emails that I've received at info@alessimd.com, and a lot of those emails are just people asking for guidance. You know, where do I go for this problem? What do I do for that problem? Would you find an expert for me and discuss this on the air? Those are the typical issues I get, other than live questions that come in that I share with everybody. But a lot of these are questions and requests that I don't publicize. So we have really created in 16 years a health community. A community of people who want to get healthier, people who are facing struggles with regard to health, and we've kind of bonded together to some degree, and I don't want to turn my back on that. And I've really gotten to know a lot of people during this. So Healthy Rounds will continue, but in a different form. So I'm happy to announce that Healthy Rounds will now be a podcast. The podcast will be released every other week, and it's going to be called Healthy Rounds at UConn Health. I have the good fortune of working at the University of Connecticut, where they have a studio, and they've kindly offered me the use of that studio and a way of getting guests. It's also reunited me with Christy Francesco. Many of you may remember him. He was a Saturday morning news and weather guy. Who sat in. So he is going to be producing the show, and we've already started production on it. Jennifer Walker, who has been instrumental with others in obtaining guests for this program, will be involved. So we have a staff, we have a new team put together at UConn, and we plan on continuing this conversation. Now, the podcast is going to be about 15 to 20 minutes. It's only going to be audio, and you can get it on your phone or any other device. So if you go to your podcast, whether it be Apple or Spotify, you just go to UConn Health. So you go to Healthy Rounds at UConn Health, and not to confuse it with our current podcasts that are just Healthy Rounds. You can also just go to uconhealth.org /healthy rounds. If you have an Apple phone, just go to podcast, click on it, search Healthy Rounds at UConn Health, and you'll get it. You just say, I want to follow it, and every 2 weeks, you're going to get it. And we're already starting to put our schedule together. My first guest is going to be Dr. Andy Aguinobi. Dr. Aguinobi is the CEO and president of UConn Health, and we've got questions for him. We've got questions about where are we going? Where is healthcare going? What's going on with buying Waterbury Hospital? How is that going to impact patients? How is that going to impact the people in the Bristol Hospital area if they do succeed in taking that over? And then my second guest already is going to be Dr. Jathani, who is the commissioner of the Department of Public Health. I want to know, are we safer here in Connecticut than other states when it comes to vaccination, when it comes to water? So those are the things we're going to be talking about. And we've already talked about spine disease with my good friend, Dr. Isaac Moss. And so we're already developing the program. And it personally gives me a break in the sense that I get to enjoy my family more on Saturday mornings. So I'm hoping that you folks will all sign up. And you do that, as I said, go to Healthy Rounds at UConn Health. But another easy way, for those of you who send me emails, you're used to going to alessimd.com. So if you just go to the website of alessimd.com and click on the button, you're going to get the first episode today. We're calling it Episode Zero because it's a brief 5-minute explanation of what the show is going to be about. So if you just go to alessimd.com, you'll be able to get it. And I thank you all for indulging me, and I especially thank those people I mentioned for all their support. And today we're going to be talking with Dr. Kevin Felice. But I wanted to also do, for the final time, This Day in Medicine. November 22nd, 1902, Walter Reed verifies the mosquito transmission of yellow fever. Now, this was important, not just from a public health standpoint, but it allowed the United States to complete the Panama Canal, because it was yellow fever that was getting in the way and killing so many of the workers. So by identifying that and taking precautions against the mosquito itself, we were able to complete what is one of the greatest feats of modern transportation. One of the things we're going to be talking to Dr. Felice about today is an article that just came up in Neurology talking about financial toxicity and its determinants on individuals living with acquired neuromuscular disorders. Now, when I heard the term financial toxicity, I wasn't sure what it meant. At first, I thought it was somebody who suddenly became rich and became a jerk, which probably is a different type of financial toxicity. But in this case, financial toxicity really talks about the financial burden placed on people with neuromuscular diseases. And it looked at 1,426 participants with a mean age of 52 years. And the problem here is that many of these acquired neuromuscular disorders are treatable. And we're going to talk about that today. But it puts a financial burden on because they often need help at home, so their loved ones are not able to go out and work. So it really puts them in a hole. So what are we doing about that? What resources are available? So we're going to chat with Dr. Felice about that shortly. With that, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to be back with my guest, Dr. Kevin Felice. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi. And if you have questions live that you want answered live on today's show, you can reach out at info@alessimd.com. It gives me great pleasure to welcome my guest, my first and last guest, Dr. Kevin Felice. Dr. Felice and I have been longtime friends, and he was our first guest on Healthy Round 16 years ago. And we share the bond of having both trained at the University of Michigan in neuromuscular diseases. I think it was way back in 1990 when Dr. Felice, myself, and Dr. Keshav Rao were probably the only three people in Connecticut boarded in neuromuscular disease. But Dr. Felice has taken that specialty to new heights. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony, and congratulations on your 16 years.
Well, thank you very much. Let's talk. Let's talk about the last 16 years in neuromuscular diseases. But I really want to start with the history behind what you've created at the Hospital for Special Care. You started at UConn, but went over, you had a new idea of something to do. And it has been such a great resource at the Hospital for Special Care for all of our patients. Can you talk about the Neuromuscular Center at the Hospital for Special Care?
Yeah, Tony, I'd be happy to. And, you know, my good friend, Dr. Charles Whitaker, who passed away last year, as you know, brought the neuromuscular program to Special Care in 2007 with the goal of not just creating a clinic for patients, but providing multidisciplinary care for patients in not just ALS patients, but patients with muscular dystrophy, Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, and other genetic and acquired neuromuscular disorders. Our goal was to have them come periodically and see a whole host of multidisciplinary care folks, PT, OT, respiratory therapists, pulmonologists. And to this day, patients come and spend 2 to 4 hours with us during their clinic visits.
So you also have gone out. I mean, the program has become recognized. I mean, you are part of the ALS Association, Muscular Dystrophy Association. Can you talk a little bit about that, your association, and what's available to patients who come to the center?
Sure, Tony. We're a certified center of excellence with the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the ALS Association, the newly formed ALS United Connecticut Association, the Charcot-Marie-Tooth Association, and the Hereditary Neuropathy Foundation. And these are our friends, both locally and nationally, that help support our programs. Many of them support us financially, as well as with, supportive care in the way of home care services and, pamphlets and brochures for patients, just keeping them involved with not just their disease and what's happening with their disease, but the types of care that are available to them, including, clinical trials and home services.
Kevin, and I'm glad you brought up the subject of financial support. And I just before you got on, I cited this article about financial toxicity and the financial impact it has to people, especially those with acquired neuromuscular diseases. Can you talk about that a little bit and your experience with the financial impact to people?
Sure, Tony. And I, one thing that when you've been doing this for a while, you realize that our medical system, as good as it is, does not care for patients with chronic disease very well. And for the example, ALS, in which patients, succumb to the disease in a 3 to 5 year period, but during that time have progressive problems and require a lot of care, including home care. And it's really important for a program like ours. We take pride in it, fighting battles for patients with insurance companies, with home care agencies, et cetera. That's kind of what we're mainly about, in addition to providing diagnostic care for patients.
Kevin, how frustrating is it for you? Because I know it's frustrating for me to have to spend time on the phone, because it's not just having support staff do this. I mean, you often have to get on the phone with these insurance companies and kind of spell it out. Has it been a frustrating part of your job?
Oh, you know it is, Tony, and I'm sure you, you've experienced it as well. You document what a patient needs, and sometimes a 10-page note, right? Yeah. And that 10-page note is not enough for the insurance company many times to approve. Many times an FDA, in the case of ALS, Tony, there are two FDA-approved medications for sporadic ALS, and one of them, Edaravone, is usually not approved by many insurance companies, even though it is FDA approved. So, we have to fight that battle with almost every patient. And it's difficult, Tony. It's difficult for the patient because emotionally they've already, they're already trying to deal with a disease that they know is terminal. And the two medications that may slow it down are available, but the insurance company gives them a hard time.
Yeah.
So that's frustrating, Tony.
Oh, yeah. And lately, it seems like the only way to get approval is to get on TV. Okay. As soon as a TV station or radio station call the insurance company about one of these cases, the follow-up is, within 24 hours, they were reconsidered. That's how ridiculous the system has become right now.
Exactly. They know they're not doing the right thing for the patient. And when it's brought to their attention in that fashion, then they reconcile very quickly. You're right.
Yeah, they don't want the bad PR. We're going to take a short break. We're going to get back with Dr. Kevin Felice. If you have questions, you can get them over to me at info@alessimd.com. And we are going to be talking about specific diseases now and the evolution of treatment in the last 16 years. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome again Dr. Kevin Felice, who is the Director of Neuromuscular Research at the Hospital for Special Care. And, Kevin, we wanted to talk a little bit about the evolution in the last 16 years since you were first on the program. You already brought up ALS, and I think that, you know, whenever we see patients with weakness, that's their biggest fear, okay, right away, is do I have Lou Gehrig's disease? But, you know, can we talk a little bit about the treatment? I mean, it's evolved so much. I mean, I believe back 16 years ago we had Relutech, right? I think that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
How have things moved along? How did we get to these two new drugs? How do they work? Walk us through a little bit.
Sure, Tony. You know, 16 years ago we knew about, you know, a couple of gene disorders in ALS, and now we have knowledge of 40 different genetic disorders that can cause familial ALS. And for each one of those, we, you know, starting to understand the mechanism, the pathology mechanism, what's causing damage to the nerve cells for each one of those. The problem is that that only represents a small percentage of ALS. About 85 to 90% of patients with ALS have what we call sporadic ALS. And unfortunately, we've come to the realization that sporadic ALS may be a syndrome and may be due to multiple different disorders. And that's kind of troublesome in a way, because finding a cure for a disorder that may be due to multiple problems is certainly problematic in the research community. But we do have three approved drugs for ALS, two for general and familial ALS: riluzole, which is a glutamate blocker, edaravone, which is a very potent antioxidant, which also which slows the progression of early ALS, and we have tofersen, which is a targeted genetic therapy for a specific type of genetic ALS due to mutations in the SOD1 gene. And I think what we're going to see more and more in the future is targeted therapies for the genetic variants of ALS, which we're discovering more and more, Tony.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about stem cells, and I remember years ago a talk Eva Feldman was doing work where injecting stem cells into the anterior horns, right into the spinal cord. Did that ever develop into anything?
Tony, there have been several studies looking at stem cell injections. And, you know, I think to envision a stem cell growing into a motor neuron that then supplies muscle fibers very far away from the implant, it's been, you know, it's going to be very difficult for that to happen. And I think researchers have come to that conclusion. What stem cells may do is they may provide nutrients and growth factors in the areas that they're injected to allow for neurons that are still functioning to function more optimally. And I think that's the kind of that's what we're looking at for stem cells right now.
Since we're on the subject of anterior horn cells a little bit, you know, you and I were still from the era where we saw people with post-polio syndrome. And unfortunately, I think we're going to start seeing it again as people don't get vaccinated. But can you mention a couple of things about post-polio? Because people, I think, are still under the impression, those who have it, that it is a reinfection of polio. Can you just briefly talk a little bit about it?
Sure, Tony. You know, the last epidemic of polio was in the early 50s, and, you know, we're still seeing some older patients who have had polio from that time, or unvaccinated people that were unvaccinated who developed poliomyelitis later, it's a monophasic illness, meaning that it, you know, like any type of viral illness, it causes injury very quickly, and then, you know, there, you know, the injury then is full at the time of the infection. But later on, many people will suffer the effects of weakness, and some in later life will develop more progressive weakness, not due to a reinfection, but due to the fact that their motor neurons are no longer able to metabolically supply muscle fibers because they're under so much stress. People with poliomyelitis who have paralytic polio, they may have lost, you know, 50, 60, 70% of their motor neurons at the time of injury. So the existing motor neurons are really trying to keep muscle fibers intact, and that metabolic process can wear thin as we get older. And that's why people will develop, you know, the so-called post-polio syndrome.
Swinging back to ALS, you know, have we made progress in terms of longevity? You talked about 3 or 4 years. I remember, I think 16 years ago, right? If someone had bulbar symptoms, their longevity was 2 years max, maybe less. Has that changed at all?
It's only changed in for the reason that multidisciplinary clinics have become more widespread in the United States. And so patients that are seen and cared for in multidisciplinary clinics tend to live longer because they are evaluated by professionals who see ALS all the time, most importantly, a respiratory therapist and pulmonologist. And using non-invasive ventilation and quickly getting a feeding tube at the, you know, at a time when breathing becomes more problematic, those things have extended survival and have provided better quality of life for patients.
Kevin, you know, I think that's an important point for our listeners. We're chatting with Dr. Kevin Felice, who is the medical director for research at the Neuromuscular Center at the Hospital for Special Care. He's also a professor of neurology at the University of Connecticut. But Kevin, I guess, is yours the only certified center now in Connecticut? I know it was originally. Are there other centers other than the Hospital for Special Care? I know it's the only one in this region.
We're the there's two ALS centers of excellence in Connecticut, ours and the VA hospital in West Haven. However, that hospital is really for patients who have served in the military, so you know, it's a smaller population of patients. I think what patients should know is that the VA provides benefits for patients with ALS who have served in active duty for greater than 6 months. And we try to get patients that see us who are ultimately diagnosed with ALS, we try to get them in touch with the VA very quickly. So they can get those benefits. But there are two certified centers in Connecticut.
For listeners, if you wish to reach out to the Neuromuscular Center, I believe the phone number is 860-612-6305. Am I correct on that, Kevin?
Yes, that's correct, Tony.
Okay. Let's move on. Myasthenia gravis. You know, 16 years ago, we were using prednisone, right, Mestinon. We were starting to use IVIG and Cellcept. Can you talk a little bit about myasthenia gravis, what it is, and what's happened in the last 16 years?
Sure, Tony. Myasthenia gravis is, as you know, one of the more satisfying disorders that we care for in neuromuscular medicine because, for the most part, we can get patients back to 100% of their activities of daily living. It is an autoimmune disease. We've known that for a long time. Most patients are producing antibodies that affect the function of the neuromuscular junction. That is where the nerve cell meets the muscle cell. And by using immunotherapy, we can counteract that and allow for patients to improve their strength and really get back to their baseline. What's happened over the last, 5 years is we have available to us, and this is interesting because it's all, when we talk about targeted therapy, we're not just talking about targeted therapy for genetic disorders, but we're talking about targeted therapy, and myasthenia gravis is a great example for immune-mediated disorders, where we target a specific part of the immune system rather than using medications that may have really incredible adverse effects. We use more targeted therapy and try to reduce the adverse effects that are produced by immunotherapy. So that's been a theme in acquired and immune-mediated disorders like myasthenia gravis.
So is that something like Vyvgart that we see advertised on TV all the time?
Yeah, Vyvgart is one of the medications that is a targeted immunotherapy. I would say to you, Tony, that even now, most neuromuscular doctors use the standard therapies and reserve these therapies, again, because they're very expensive. And many times we can use our standard therapies to put people in remission with myasthenia gravis. So I'm still a little old-fashioned in that regard, because I really learned how to care for and treat myasthenia gravis fairly well. And I'm saving and I'm using these newer therapies for people that are refractory to the older treatments.
Do we still use plasmapheresis? I mean, in terms of when someone's in myasthenic crisis, do you still use plasmapheresis?
Yeah, we usually have them. If someone's in crisis meaning they are developing shortness of breath or have, they suddenly cannot swallow, we, fortunately, very seldom get into that because our immunotherapies that they take daily usually counteract any of those major problems from occurring. So that, the myasthenic crisis, patients will be admitted to the hospital for plasmapheresis or sometimes IV immunoglobulin. Plasmapheresis tends to be a more standard and important treatment for for patients with myasthenic crisis. And it usually works more frequently than it works better in many cases than IV immunoglobulin. But they're both there and available for patients with myasthenic crisis.
Kevin, we talked about MDA and muscular dystrophy, and obviously, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, everybody remembers Jerry's Kids and raising money and really the phenomenal work they do. But let's drill down, and they cover a lot of diseases, but let's talk about muscular dystrophy itself, because I think that's an exciting field since we've discovered the dystrophin gene and things such as that. Can you bring us up to speed on treating patients with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy and other muscular dystrophies?
Sure. Just, there's another area, Tony, that's just blossomed and very difficult to keep up with. When you and I started treating patients in the 90s, there may have been 20 different muscular dystrophies that we, identified and tried to diagnose for patients. And now, the latest is that there's over 800 genetic disorders that have been identified which can affect the neuromuscular system, and many of them cause muscle disease. So it's a real complicated area. The major disorders like Duchenne muscular dystrophy, spinal muscular atrophy, have been the science has really concentrated on finding treatments and cures for these disorders. For instance, in SMA, spinal muscular atrophy, gene therapy has been instrumental in helping children who would have died in infancy or very young to live longer. And gene therapy is also being developed for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, although there have been problems which we're seeing with other forms of genetic therapy in patients who are having, they're allergic to these medications, they're having allergies to these medications, and it's causing some rejection in some patients and some severe reactions. So we're being very cautious about some of these therapies, but, things are moving forward, and I think, in the next few years, we're going to see more targeted gene therapies for the different types of neuromuscular disorders.
So let's go move on, and probably the neuromuscular problem that affects most people is peripheral neuropathy, right? And you could see there's peripheral neuropathy centers, and everybody thinks they have a cure for peripheral neuropathy, right? We see that from chiropractic colleagues. We see that from miraculous drugs that they're advertising. Let's have a general discussion. Let's talk about peripheral neuropathy in general. And I also want to talk a little bit about some of the immune-mediated ones like CIDP. Again, something that, you and I knew about, but now we see it advertised on TV. So let's talk a little bit about peripheral neuropathy.
Yeah, doesn't it make you laugh a little bit that CIDP and myasthenia gravis are being advertised by pharma companies that are, these are rare disorders and they're just trying to get these patients to talk with their doctors about prescribing very, very expensive medications that probably are not indicated. But I don't want to get into that.
It's a marketing strategy, right? It's the old pull marketing strategy. Work around the doctor. So
right. But peripheral neuropathy is any disorder that affects, the peripheral motor or sensory axons, and the causes are, as you know, Tony, you could open a textbook and read about all the different causes of neuropathy. I mean, the major causes in the United States continue to be neuropathy associated with diabetes, with kidney disease, with metabolic syndrome, with cancer chemotherapies, with excessive and long-term alcohol abuse, and with certain types of neuropathies, which we call Charcot-Marie-Tooth diseases, run in families. So when we see patients with newly diagnosed neuropathy, we're trying to tease that out. Could it be one of these more common disorders, or are we going to have to go to what we call tier 2 or tier 3 testing, where we're going to have to, look for connective tissue diseases, for amyloid, and things like that?
So, one of the things that they've put out is, you see there's a guy on there talking about Nervive and alpha-lipoic acid. And I remember years ago they talked about alpha-lipoic acid for people with diabetic peripheral neuropathy. Has that panned out? Is that something you use, or is it something listeners should be aware of?
Tony, I tell patients I mostly try to give them advice based on evidence-based medicine. However, I don't downplay supplements, especially supplements that are safe.
Yeah.
I tell patients if it's safe and you want to try it, there are certain supplements that I try, and, peripheral nerve experts will, try to tell patients not to take mega doses of, like vitamin B6, which in large doses can cause a sensory neuropathy. But short of that, we try to encourage people to live healthy lifestyles. We try to identify the disorder. And if they bring up alpha-lipoic acid, which there's not really evidence-based medicine for, or some of the other supplements, we kind of go along with them as long as these supplements are safe.
Are you still using gabapentin, amitriptyline? I mean, I remember when amitriptyline was the only thing we had, and then gabapentin came along. Are you still using that for painful peripheral neuropathy?
You very often will use gabapentin, pregabalin, Cymbalta, medications like that for painful neuropathy. Fortunately, in my practice, I see mostly immune-mediated and genetic types of neuropathy, although some of them do develop painful symptoms, and we certainly will prescribe those medications if necessary.
Kevin, I got a last question for you. If you and I were still here 16 years from now, what do you think we'd be talking about in neuromuscular disease?
I think it's going to be an extension of what we're talking about now, Tony. I think we're going to see more targeted therapies for immune-mediated disorders. We're going to probably see therapies develop for diabetic neuropathy, although you would hope that patients would adopt a more healthy lifestyle to avoid, you know, this epidemic of diabetes mellitus. And we're also going to see, you know, more targeted therapies for the genetic neuromuscular disorders, targeted gene therapies. And I think some of them, like the treatment for spinal muscular atrophy, some of them are going to probably be very successful. So I hope that we can talk in 16 years and have that discussion.
I hope so as well, Kevin. And Kevin, I have to thank you. I thank you for your friendship over the years. I thank you for training my daughter, Catherine, to be a neuromuscular specialist, and our relationship since 1992, and really for everything you've done and the people at the Hospital for Special Care. I've been to their center multiple times. I said my daughter trained there. It is a phenomenal facility in terms of what they do for neuromuscular disease. And when he talks about, it didn't just glance over me, a visit that lasts between 2 and 4 hours, that's what it takes. Okay, it takes a lot of attention and care, and they give it at the Hospital for Special Care. Thanks to you, Kevin. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it, Tony. I've been blessed to work at a very good institution that really cares for chronic disease patients. And I thank you for our friendship. And best of luck with your podcast.
Thank you very much. You'll be hearing from me there, too.
Thanks, Tony.
We're going to take a short break, and then I'm going to be back with a little wrap-up for today's show. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds, and we're going to wrap up this last live show. Obviously, want to thank my guest, Dr. Kevin Felice. But many thanks to our studio producer, Kevin Corza, who's been on the board. Matt Sirois has done so much here and been on the board before Kevin. And Joey Burgoyne, who's been here for the whole time, for 16 years, he has technically put these things together and will continue to put them together till the end of the year. Jeff Chandler is the current person in charge of sales and marketing for Healthy Rounds and has done a phenomenal job, and as I mentioned, Amy Ashton before him. But I really want to take time to thank my team here. My daughters, Jacqueline, Catherine, and Stephanie. As I mentioned, Catherine is a neuromuscular specialist, a neurologist with me at UConn, trained by Dr. Felice. Dr. Stephanie Alessi LaRosa over at Hartford Healthcare. She is the director of sports neurology and has been a frequent guest on our program to bail me out occasionally. But most of all, I have to thank my parents, my father, who's now deceased, who never missed the program and actually listened to the program on the day right before he passed on. And naturally, my wife, Claire, for putting up with me and putting up with all these Saturdays, for which I am eternally grateful. With that, we will continue the conversation over at alessimd.com, And also, you'll get where you can get the Healthy Rounds at UConn Health Podcast, so we can continue our conversations about health and supporting each other as a community for good health. For the final time, this has been Dr. Anthony Alessi. Please stay healthy.
This has been Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by Hartford Healthcare, Rochford Eye Center, St. Francis Hospital, Covaris, and UConn Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Be sure to tune in next Saturday morning at 11 for more Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com. Till then, stay well.